Nachash Nechoshes, the copper snake, in Bamidbar, Perek Chaf Aleph, begins on Pasuk Dalet. We'll go through the story quickly, and then we'll... Yes, Chaf Aleph. That is the place, right? Vayusu Mehor Hahor, Derech Yamsuf, Lisbov Etz Eretz Edom, Vatiktar Nefesh Ha'am Badorach. And the... How would you translate the word Vatiktar? Taruach. Became, yeah, weary or short. Rashi says, Kitzar, he explains. Rashi explains Kitzaruach. That's a certain state in which a person feels he just can't take anymore. I think some people here might be familiar with that condition. It's like a person who, right, like very Katzar is to be like narrow. Like there's just no room in his soul. It's like a person who feels he doesn't have any room in his heart to tolerate another pain. It's like he's had it. There's no room. You see? That's his problem. He's just lacking in room. He doesn't have the space. Yeah, he doesn't have the internal space with which to absorb another blow. Yeah. He's had it. That's what Rashi says. You take a look at Rashi, you'll see. Vayedaber Aram, and the people spoke Be'elokim of Moshe, about God and about Moshe. Which is important over here because Rashi says, Hishvu Eve Lokainai. Bear that in mind. It appears from the way the Pasuk presents it is that there was a certain equation between Moshe and Hashem. Put them on the same level. Lama Helisunim Mitzrayim, Lamas Ba Midbar. Why did you take us out of Egypt to kill us or to die in the Midbar? Kiyen Lechem V'yein Mayim. Lamas Ba Midbar. Yeah, to die in the Midbar. In other words, they didn't go so far as to say to kill us. I translated it that way. That was what they were really saying, in effect. It was interesting psychology over here. In other words, why did you take us out in order for us to die here? In effect, is really saying the real time is why are you trying to kill us? But apparently, they couldn't. That part was repressed. They didn't actually enunciate it that way. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. But that's really I would say. Unless I'm just projecting, I would say that's the intent. Ki ein lechem v'ein mayim, because there's no bread and there's no mayim. V'nafshenu katza v'alechem hakolokel. And again, our souls are what's the translation of katza? Yeah, or Rashi. Rashi gives the same right, the same meaning as he has by Tiktar, same idea. Avzeh loshon kitzer nefesh umius. It's a it's like a guy that can't take it anymore. He's had it. Disgusted with it. He just can't take it anymore. What? Rashi says. Rashi gives another interesting medrash over here. Lefi shaman. You see, the thing is like this. You have to understand. It's sort of a. You see how the instincts work themselves out. It's a little bit of a contradiction. They're complaining there's no lechem and there's no mayim. So what about the mun? You have mun. All right. So therefore they had to find a way of negating the existence of the mun. So what did they do? They said it's lechem aklokel. Nashenu katzah lechem aklokel. We can't take this. There's really two ideas over there. Interesting. Nashenu katzah, that we're disgusted with it. But then it's also lechem aklokel. It's really two ideas. As we'll come back to colloquial. Well, kal, very light. But Rashi gives a further idea. In other words, it's not satisfying food. But the term of colloquial is also, has a deeper significance. We'll return to these things. As Rashi points out, Lefisha mon nivla bevarim. Since the mon became totally absorbed in their organs, kra'o colloquial. That's why they called it colloquial. Amru, asid hamon hazeh, you see, sheyiftach me'enu. This man is destined to explode inside of us. Klum yesh l'risha, shemachnas v'yena motzi. Is it possible for a one who was born of woman, in other words, for a human creature, to bring something into a system and now it shouldn't come out? In other words, you see, the man, there was no waste with the man. It was perfect food. Everything became utilized. You see? There was no excretion. So, what they said that's that was their basis for complaining about it. They said, this is ridiculous. We're going to, it's just going to kill us. We're going to explode someday. That's it. I'm asking a good question. Because I pointed out there are two things over here. In other words, v'nafshenu katza is one idea. V'lechem ha'kolokel is the next idea. The emotion is nafshenu katza. All right? The rationalization for the complaint, right? The motivation is nafshenu katza. They're just sick of it. But the justification, the rationalization is lechem ha'kolokel. So that's clear. So Levi wants to know, why would they object to it in the first place if it could taste like anything? We'll see if we can answer that question. I mean, the shear today doesn't depend necessarily on understanding why or how that can be. We can just make a tentative idea about that. I don't know if we have to explain it fully. We're basing ourselves on the assumption that they weren't satisfied. Okay? To bring me into the physical, I have some ideas about why it wasn't satisfied. But as I say, the shear does not depend on that today. What? God sent to the the nechashim hasrafim. What's nechashim hasrafim? Fiery serpents. What's the fire? Poisonous. Now, this is important because, of course, we want to understand every element over here. So Rashi points out that the nechashim hasrafim are nechashim that are sorfim es adam ba'ares shineihem. The nechashim. Which burned a person with the poison. In other words, burning him means poison. Vayinashku es ha'am, they bit the people. Vayomas am rov miYisrael, and a lot of people died. Vayevo am el Moshe, and the people came to Moshe. Vayomru chatanu, and they said, we sinned, ki dibanu v'Hashem v'avach, because we spoke about God and you. Hispalo v'Hashem, be mispalel to God, v'yaser me'aleinu es ha'nachash. And he let him take away from us the nachash. V'yispalel Moshe b'yad ha'am, and Moshe was mispalel for the nation. V'yomer Hashem ha'Moshe, God said to Moshe, asei lecha saraf, make for yourself a saraf, a serpent. V'simo so al nes, and place it on a pole. V'hoya kal ha'nashach, and it'll be whoever is bitten, v'ro oso v'chai, and he will see it and live. What does it mean? Very simple what it means. I'll just say it in my own words. Moshe had prayed to God to save the people from being killed by the snakes. God answered him and said, this is what you should do. Make for yourself the image of a serpent, all right? And then place it on a high pole. And now, whoever is bitten by a snake from now on, he'll look at the snake on the pole and live. That's one of the questions. I asked Moshe nechash nechoshes, and Moshe made a nechash nechoshes, a copper snake. Vayisimeo al hanes, and he placed it on a pole. V'hibit el nechash nechoshes v'chai, and it was that whoever. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Vayisimeo al hanes v'hoya im noshach hanachosh esish, and it was that if the nachash would bite a man, v'hibit el nechash hanachoshes v'chai. And he would look at the nechash nechoshes and live. All right, this is the parsha. What are the basic questions? I think the main question is obvious. The real question, of course, is this bit about the nechash nechoshes. But are there any other? We always try and get all the main issues, the ones that are interrelated to this theme. Mark, the reason for the bringing of the snakes? That's really what you're getting at, Marshall. In other words, well, yeah, you're asking, does it symbolize this, does it symbolize that? So in order to know what it is, then we have to ask, that's the question. Yeah, the Einesh. That's right. That's right. We know that everything, this is all a result of Hashgacha. So everything has to have a cause. So why did God choose this particular Onesh of a snake in this case? Nechashim Hasrafim, by the way. We have to see if we can include that element in our answer, right? Nechashim hasrafim. That's the second question. Yes, Alan. Point again. You're asking indirectly instead of asking directly. That's the question. Oh, well, that's the amazing remedy over here. This is the real essence of the whole story over here. The really difficult part. What is this whole bit with the looking at the snake? those are the main questions. You may have a few accessory questions over here. Use Beresh very carefully. This is Chazal, by the way. In Pasuk Ches, there seems to be a little bit of a discrepancy between Ches and Tes. You see? What is it? Ches, it's V'hoya Kol HaNoshach. All, whoever was bitten. And it says V'roa Oso V'chai. In Tes it says V'hoya Imnoshach HaNochosh Eso Ish. If a snake bit the man, V'hi bit. In other words, there's two differences over there. In one place it's Kol HaNoshach, and it says V'roa Oso V'chai. In the second one it's specifically Imnoshach HaNochosh and V'hi bit. So there is a significant change of word, which I myself wouldn't raise as an issue, but there is Chazal. Chazal derish like this. Take a look at Rashi. He says like this. Kol HaNoshach. He says, Afilu Kelev O Chamor Noshcho. Even if a dog or a donkey bit him, Haya Nizuk Umamtuna Vaholech. He would be damaged, and he would slowly get worse. Elish and Ashikas HaNoshach B'maheres Lohamas. The bite of the snake would kill him very quickly. The Kachnemar Kan V'ro Oso. In the first place, it's referring to Kol HaNoshach, right? Kol HaNoshach means any bite. So apparently they were bitten not just by snakes, but by any other kind of animals too, except there was a difference between the two types of bite already. See, now you have two bites. The one that was bitten by the Kela, by a different animal, would have more time, let's put it this way. Would die more slowly. And for him, V'ro Oso. Re'ia Ba'alma. All he required was just a look at the snake, he'd get better right away. Uvenishichas hanachash nemar vihibit. However, by the bite of the snake, it says vihibit, habata. Habata means a process of real concentration. You see, it's not just a look at the thing, but it's an involvement, concentration. Shalohoyim amahir neshech hanachash lisrapais. Because the one who was bitten by the snake did not get better very quickly. Elim came mabit by the kavana, unless he was really mabit, he looked at it the kavana. All right, and all right, we'll leave it. The next part of the Rashi is significant. All right, we can mention it now. It requires interpretation. Rashi asks our question: the chinachash meimus omachaya. Can a snake kill or make you to live? He's asking that question. What's the significance of looking at the snake? Elab is Mancha Yisrael Mestaklin Klape Mala. However, when the people were looking up at heaven, at God, Umeshabdin Es Libam Laviyim Shabashmayim, and they were subduing their heart to their Father in heaven, Hayu is Rapim. Vim Lo Hayu Nimukim. And if not, they were wiped out. So Rashi is trying to give an explanation of the significance. Of course, it doesn't really explain it, so what do you have to have a snake for? If the concept over here is just to subject your will to God's, so then why do you have to have this intermediary of the snake? So what is the snake? What is the snake? So Rashi is giving us some clue, right? That there's nothing magical over here, but it requires interpretation. I wanted to tack on this question, however, is it would seem from here that there were two different types of cases, right? One case would be a regular bite from a different animal, and that apparently the guy didn't die so quickly, and also his cure was much easier. All you had to do was look at it. And the second case was the case who was bitten by a snake, which died quickly and didn't heal quickly either. He had to have a real process of abata. Now again, let's see if we can define that. What's the difference over here? Yeah. Why the punishment of the snakes and the concept of the concept of nachash, of rather nachashim asrafim, poisonous snakes. What does it mean? And why? And finally, the issue of the nachash, the cure. And within that, we want to know the difference between the one who merely had to glance and the one who had to really concentrate with kavana. Okay? Those are the basic questions that I want to address myself to, although I agree there could be further issues here. I think these are the major ones. Alright? As far as the snake itself, why were they punished with the snake? That's the first question. I mean, from this we'll hopefully get both answers. In other words, what was the nature of the chait, right? And why the snake is suitable means of punishment. There's a Rashi over here. Okay? Take a look at Rashi. Well, it's on Vav. First Rashi on Vav is Es HaNechashim HaSrafim, which we read already. The second one is Vayinashchu Es'am. Does everybody have that? Vayinashchu Es'am. So Rashi, this Rashi obviously is trying to explain to you why they were punished with snake bite. So he says, Yavai Nachash Shalaka Al Hotzas Diba. Let the Nachash come, which was smitten for Hotzas Diba, for what it said. The para mimotze diba, and let it take its revenge or punishment against those who are motzi diba. In other words, the snake is a symbol of what? Of lashon hara, saying the wrong things. But that's not the only reason. Yavai nachash shekol haminin nitamin lo tam echad. Let the nachash come for whom all of the different foods in the world, all different species of food, taste the same to him. In other words, the nachash cannot distinguish taste. Right? V'yipara mekifuye teva. And let it take revenge against those who are, right, ungrateful for good which was done to them. Shedavar echad mishtan lehem lekama matamim. Because they were given something which could transform itself into the taste of different things. That's where it takes up your point, Alevi. So it's an amazing Rashi. What do you say about this Rashi? The truth of the matter is that if you look at the pasuk, it's obvious. One chait is because what they said about lechem aklokel, right? They disparaged the man. That was the chait of kafei tov. The other one was diba. Motzi diba, they spoke against God and Moshe. I'm sorry? Let's not worry about what Rashi omits, but Rashi is saying one thing. What is Rashi saying here? What's he telling us? He's telling us, he's really defining for us the whole issue, the role that the snake is playing in. Here we see what I think is a clear-cut usage of symbolism. In other words, the method you see in the whole halachic system, you see examples where spiritual realities, right, are experienced or portrayed through certain physical realities. If you remember the whole discussion, I don't want to go into that whole thing right now. Familiar with the idea about it's on the Nidan Kashrus tape. It's also the whole concept of tefillin and tzitzis and mezuzah, right? In other words, that really there are basic concepts over there, right? The idea that when a person is concerned about the physical, right, he should also be aware that there's a soul and that also requires shmirah, protection, right? Oh. But then the question was, so what do you have to have it in the form of something on your clothing, right? And why you just have the idea? And the answer is that it's necessary for man, in other words, that these ideas have to be implemented, have to be expressed in certain physical things that the person relates to all the time. So I want to say a similar thing. I mean, it's not the exact same thing, but similarly speaking, that over here God chose to demonstrate certain spiritual phenomena through the physical. In other words, the snake, you see, the snake is symbolic. The snake is symbolic of something that's happening within them. You get the idea? Now what it is, we'll soon find out. But the snake over here, the whole thing begins to make sense when you replace the external snake with the internal snake. Okay? There's an external snake and there's an internal snake. Now let's take it from there. What is the snake? You understand my method? What I'm saying over here is that this Rashi tells us that we have to, in order to understand the snake, you have to forget about the physical snake and take a look at the symbolic. The snake as a symbol. Now, what is the snake as a symbol? Symbolic of what? Now, where do we see? Where do we see the snake? What's our source? In Bereishis. Okay? Right? Now, if you go through the story in Bereishis about the Chet HaAdam, there's different interpretations about this whole part, about the snake, what it means. I'm basing myself on the Pshat of Sferno,
who holds that, who doesn't take it literally, that part. In other words, he doesn't hold that there was really a talking snake over there. He holds that the snake over there is also symbolic. It's symbolic, the snake, he says the snake over there is the Yetzer Hara. In other words, there was never a real discussion between her and a Nachash, but rather it's an inner conflict between two parts of her. And the Torah depicts this as though it were two separate creatures, one creature talking to the other. You see, it's objectifying an internal conflict. Now, why is it like the snake? Why is the Yetzer Hara, rather? Why is it represented by a snake? What's the reason for that? Yeah, tricky and all that. He gives an interesting thing. He says that because it does a tremendous amount of damage due to the fact that it's hidden. So, alright, we'll get back to that point. Because I want to understand also, we understand that the snake over here is referring to the instincts. The Yetzer Hara, by the way, means the human instincts. And they do a great deal of damage due to the fact that they're hidden from a person. All right, now we'll take that up in a few minutes, the significance, how that fits in over here. We also, by the way, have to understand the poison, right? In other words, this only will account for the idea of the snake itself. But what about the idea of the saraf, of the poison? Okay, let's go on a little bit further, though. We see over here that there were two sins, right? There were two sins. The sin of Kafei Tov and the sin of Diba, right? Okay. Now one of our questions is, are these two separate sins entirely, right? Or is there basically some inner relationship, right? Some common denominator, one underlying point. What would you say? All right, let's first take the chait of Lashon Hara, of Diba. Alright? I think we went over this already. But let's refresh our memory. What's the essential evil of Lashon Hara? Ethically, from the ethical point of view. Right. Do you remember what I quoted there's a chazal, right? What? Hesh? Distortion of the There's a base chazal that contains the point. It says, Lama Nismacha. Why was the parsha of the Meraglim? Right? The parsha of the Meraglim comes right after the parsha of Miriam. If you remember, the chait of Miriam means the chait of Lashon Hara. She spoke against Moshe, that Moshe had separated from his wife. Right? And she said that was the wrong thing to do because we're also Nevi'im and we didn't separate from Derech Eretz, right? So Rashi says that these Meraglim, they saw that she was smitten, that she was punished for Lashon Hara, and they didn't learn from it. They also spoke Lashon Hara. What did they speak Lashon Hara? About the land, right? They said it's Eretz Ochel, it's Yoshevea. It's a bad land. Now, if you remember, what was the question that we had over there? What was difficult for us to understand was, how can the chait of Lashon Hara apply to a piece of land? That was the difficulty. Lashon Hara, we understand, is when you're hurting somebody. You're slandering a person, destroying his reputation. Right? Now, why would you use the same concept when a person speaks badly about a land? In that case, you're not hurting anybody. The land doesn't care what you say about it. So the answer that we gave is what? Who remembers the answer? You see, the whole, from the ethical point of view, it's true that there's a component of harming someone, you see. But, I mean, the Yisra of Lashon Hara is a personal thing, even when you're not harming someone. All right? Now, the real ethical defect over there is the fact that you're changing the nature of a certain reality, distorting the nature of a reality. Why? As a cover for your own emotions. In other words, rather than face mum shebechal tasim al chavercha, Chazal say, your own mum you should not place on somebody else. But that's something that people do all the time. In order to avoid having to look at the self and to really admit a person's own defects, he always distorts the reality. You see, that was the thing with Miriam. All right, there the emotion happened to be the emotion of ego, the fact that Moshe is so much greater, that he's on a totally different level, right? Rather than face that, so she distorted his nature, that he's not on such a great level. He's not that. He's different than we are, he's better, but it's quantitative. She couldn't accept the fact of this tremendous qualitative difference. And the same thing happened by the Meraglim. In other words, there the emotion was fear, right? But rather than face up to the fact that they were afraid, to admit the emotion of fear, what did they do? They went and destroyed. The land is no good. It's not us. We don't have a problem. That land is not worth fighting for. So they therefore distorted. Now, when of course you know what the effect of this is, what the damage is. When a person utilizes this mechanism, there's no way in the world that he's ever going to improve himself. Because he'll always, that's right, it's totally hidden from his view. Totally hidden from view, and he's never going to look at the real source. He'll just keep distorting reality, and everything seems fine. So he'll just definitely keep going his way. If you understand this idea, then you'll see that there was really one chait over here. There was really one chait with two different manifestations. What was the one chait over here? Distortion of reality. You see, the first one was with the man. What does Rashi bring that in for? What was the whole chait? What's the kufi tov? Kufi tov is, instead, right, something which is really a good, which is really a benefit for you, so you distort it into an evil. What do you think Rashi brings up that fact over there of colloquial? The fact that it's, listen to the argument, the fact that it was what? It was nivla bevarim, right? Which is really a good. What's the good? The good is it's the most perfect type of a food. I mean, the fact that it's all utilized, and the fact that you don't have to have any problem, right, about anything else, so that's a good for a person. And stuff. So that they distorted, and they made that into they found a way. You see the emotion. Well, the emotion will find a way. You'll take anything, it's a perfect situation, and you'll distort it, and you'll take one aspect out of it and distort that whole thing, and it becomes an evil. So the kufli tov was the mechanism of what? Of distortion of the reality. And that, of course, relate, that brought them to the second chait. You see? In other words, the first problem was they weren't satisfied with the man. Right? Why weren't they satisfied with the man? What caused them not to be satisfied with the man? Was really their own emotions. Because if you remember what we learned about the man, right? That there were two aspects to the man. There was the food part, and then there was the element of Torah, of being involved in Torah, right? It was the perfect food which satisfies a person. But it satisfies a person, right, if his energy is really involved in Chachma and Torah. So therefore, his need of the physical is going to be satisfied with that amount that the man is capable of giving. See, apparently the man, I don't know too much about this thing about the tasting and not tasting. You're getting into the physical parts. I would say that whatever it is, it didn't satisfy the type of the imagination. In the guy's imagination, you see? In other words, yeah, it means to say that it wasn't one bland taste, it had other tastes, you see? And if a person, within reason, it could satisfy a person. But the point is, if a person is motivated by tithe, he won't be satisfied because he imagines a steak. It's the whole physical fantasy there, you see? And the monk could not satisfy that fantasy for food. It can only satisfy a person if he was no longer functioning on the level of fantasy. Right? So since they could not raise themselves to the proper level, instead of admitting and acknowledging that, what did they do? They destroyed the reality of the man. Okay? And since, now what was the next step? The next step was what? That since they were now dissatisfied with the man, so the next thing is what? Rebellion against the one that put us in this situation. You see? God is not our benefactor. Instead of looking at God as a benefactor, right? God doesn't care about us. God takes his attitude to be killed. So therefore, they did something worse. They distorted the nature of Moshe and of God, which is far worse. Which is far worse. That's the real debunk. But the two things are interrelated in every way. They're interrelated causally. You see, the one, in other words, since they were unsatisfied with the month, they were angry at God. Aggression. You see, frustration of the taiva leads to rebellion and distortion against God. You got that up to this point? I would say, now I think on the basis of this, we can explain a little what it means by the Saraf. So what's the Saraf? What's the Saraf? Of the Saraf. Yeah? Identify the poison. The poison a little bit more clearly. What would you say to that? The snake is the instinct. You see? The snake is the instinct. And the snake produces the poison. The poison is a product of the instinct. Now let's see if we could translate that into our own terms, into psychic terms. Right? Alright. Well, I'd say, just getting back to what we said before, you have the eye to say it, don't I? In other words, the real dangerous feature of the instincts. See, instincts per se wouldn't be that bad, right? But the problem is that people are acting out of instinct, and they're not aware that it's instinct that they're acting out of. The instinct is totally hidden. What has taken place? What has taken the place of the instinct in their eye, in their vision? The whole false value system, the whole philosophy system, the distortion. You see, in other words, there's a whole distortion of reality. A person goes through life. You see, a person goes through life chasing after something. All right. Now, what is he chasing after? He's chasing after something that's being pushed on, right, by the instinct. And he is not aware of instinct. In his own mind now, he's worked out a whole system of ideas, of values and goods and rights and wrongs and everything, which is nothing more than the instinct. It's the elaboration of instinct. What is the poison over here? The false ideas about life. The false way of thinking. That is the poison. That's what kills a person. Because once it's taken that form, you see? Once the process of distortion has entered into his thinking, it's created a whole system, a whole attitude towards life, then he's totally finished, because now he goes smoothly towards his destruction. He's following his instinct. It's nothing more than instinct, but the instinct has taken over his thinking process, and all of his ideas are a combination of what? Of emotions and thought and logic mixed together to produce a certain system of ideas, which is only designed to satisfy the basic instinct. It's the contamination of thought through the instinct. That's what I would say is the sorrow over here. See, there's two things that had to be that God had to demonstrate to them. See, God wanted to demonstrate to them that the real cause of their destruction, is the internal condition. Now, let's answer the questions, and then we'll come back and we'll see what problems remain here. According to this, can anybody figure out now the significance of the
They came.
You see, they came of the Nechash Nechoshes. Of course, they came to Moshe, and they said, "Pray to God," and they admitted that they sinned, right? But that was not sufficient. Why was that not sufficient? That was a good first step. That's right. Exactly.
Exactly.
In order to be saved, they had to go through a process of change. A person is under tremendous pain, of course he's going to run. I mean, that's like the foxhole mentality. There's no atheist in the foxhole, they say. I was a kid, I read a very short story by Hemingway. It really depicted it beautifully. He has this guy, the whole thing is this guy in the foxhole, and he's talking to God. And he's becoming like becoming from what he's going to do and this and that, if only be saved, you know. He goes through the whole thing like that. And then it ends, and the next scene is, and that's where it ends. The next scene, the guy's in a bar, he's drinking and everything, you know, and it says he didn't speak about God then, and he never spoke about God again, or something like that. But that's exactly what it is. In other words, that's no change. God wants to give them the element of fear, the element of danger. Because when a person is walking that way, when he's distorted all the reality, you can't argue with him in terms of the spiritual reality. You see? He's not, in other words, the way it's very, like Don said, it's very egocentric. It makes sense. It's very good for him. So the only thing that's going to stop the guy, if there's a danger which he can't avoid, you tell him about the spiritual danger, doesn't mean anything to him. So therefore, God had to give them a situation which they couldn't avoid. Destruction. You're facing destruction right now. They had to go to Moshe. So they admitted there's something wrong. But that wasn't sufficient. In order for them to be saved, that was Akaras Achet, but it's not complete tshuva. You see? They admitted that they sinned. But just to say I sinned is a far cry from complete tshuva. In order to be saved, they had to go through a process of change. Now, what's the point of the copper snake? The entire chet over there, you see, the entire chet consisted of what? Of the admixture, right? Of mixing together of the emotion, right? And thinking and reasoning, to the extent that they denied the instinct. They didn't see that in with the instinct. It's just that the mother's no good. The situation is no good. They didn't see the instinct, the instinctual force behind it. So the only way to salvation was for what? To separate and isolate. Separation of the emotion from your thinking, and isolation, and looking and acknowledging the emotion. Acknowledging the honesty about the self. Acknowledgement of the instinct. That was the goal. That was the only way that could be saved. Right? Now, that's exactly what the snake represents. See? And looking at the snake. Now, what about the two types of looking? Does anybody ever look slowly and would be healed both things? He'd die slowly and be healed quicker. So you have two facts over there. Then there's the one who was bitten by the snake who would die quickly. And, yeah, in other words, real... But you see, Eddie, it wasn't just voodoo. I mean, Rashi says it was... yeah, it was Kavana. Well, now you understand what Rashi means. Umeshavdin es liba lavim shabashmayim. It was a whole process of tshuva, of change of the heart. But the only way you can be meshavad your heart, lavim shabashmayim, is if first you acknowledge the instinct, you see? If the guy can acknowledge the source, then he can be meshavad his heart to God. If he doesn't do that, it's impossible. Now, what's the two categories? Go ahead, Flip. In other words, there's two different characters that we're dealing with now. Two different types of sinner. Written by the Nachash has less conflict. See, what Shmuley is pointing out is a very good point, is that in this case, conflict is a sign of health. And he's right. Conflict is a sign of health. But, well, let's get that a little bit more specific. Yeah, the fact is that as long as the guy has a conflict, then there's hope, it's a sign of health. The conflict is a sign that the instinctual forces have not completely overtaken his thinking. That there is a part of his thinking process which is healthy and can give a look at the other part and do battle. And it's a battle. It's a conflict. It's good. Conflict is not bad. As opposed to the other guy who is not in conflict. He's not in conflict, not because he's in a good state. Precisely because he's dead. Death is also removal from conflict. All this stuff is very good. It's just a question of sort of capitalizing it. What we have over here is two categories of sinner. I mean, roughly speaking, we sometimes refer to it as the philosophical neurotic as opposed to the philosophical psychotic. Does that begin to make sense? I would say that like this. Generally speaking, though, I mean, we can amplify this. I'm going to give you the answer in general terms. Is that you can have a person whose manner of functioning is basically healthy. You see? The distortion has not overtaken his entire thinking process. He's in touch with reality. Except even a person like that in a certain area can be overcome by an emotion. And when he's overcome by an emotion, you see, and it's hidden from him, so of course he's going to do the wrong actions. But for that person, all that's required is what? You point out the emotion, you see? Anybody, that can happen to anybody. Now, where do we see a perfect example of what? Re'iya Ba'alma. Where do you see that? David HaMelech, you see? David HaMelech sinned with Bathsheba, right? And he sent Uriah to the front lines, right? Now, this whole thing was hidden from him. The whole evil over here, I mean, was done on the surface. It was, each step could be defended, right? But the basic underlying motivation was, of course, wrong, right? And you see that as soon as Nathan HaNavi came to him, all right, he gave him a little analogy over there, pointed, then the king said, this is terrible, it's an evil, who did it? Oh, Atzah-ish, right? And what did David say right away? Chatasi, right, immediately, it's it. He pointed out, in other words, his mechanism, his mind was basically intact. But like anything else, it's possible that any person could be overcome by an emotion. And when he's overcome by an emotion, right, it'll be hidden from him. He'll go through the same procedure. However, since his mechanism is healthy, right, you could point it out to him, and once you point it out to him, he's capable of seeing it, and that's it, he's cured. Then you got a more serious case. The case is what we call the philosophical psychotic. That the distortion has reached, you see, the life of distorting is so entrenched that he can no longer see reality anymore. You follow? Therefore you can't really deal with this person. What are you going to use? The only thing you could use is reality. But this person distorted to such an extent that he can never really see. That is a death. That's the situation. If that person dies right away. See, what I mean is like this, is that it didn't happen haphazardly. The one that was bitten, in other words, the state, the physical state, right, that occurred to you represented your spiritual state. You see what I'm saying? The one that was bitten by the dog was in the other spiritual state. The spiritual state where he was being overcome. He was in danger. There's a danger. Why? But it goes slow. I'm tennis for Halech. It gets worse and worse. You see? You can't, another point, you can't isolate your neurosis to one area and say, well, in this case, I'm going to be neurotic. In the other areas, I'll be okay. Because why? That's it. Once a person gets into this emotion over here, it's just going to go on and on and on. It's going to affect other areas. There's an interrelationship among emotions. Right now, it's the mun, right? Next time, but it's really taiva. Next time, it'll be something else. So it's mantenas mahalech. You follow what I'm saying? But at this stage of the game, there's not an immediate danger of death. The other one is the one that has the complete poison. The one who's at the stage where he has no life anymore, because his entire value system is a result of the poison of distortion. So he requires what? A whole thing of habat, of concentration, means a whole process of separation in order to save the guy. If he can't, that's right. If he can't go through that process of separation, he actually has to save himself. Then he's finished right away. Those are the two things. Okay, that's basically what I wanted to cover.
Holy,
the ground. See, in both cases, the nachash represents the yetzara, right? The animals also. See, the symbolism in the animals, the dog or the donkey, is the animal. The animal part in man, the instinctual part. They both represent the instinctual. Except at what degree, you see? At what degree of...
Not as hidden.
Right. Snake is more hidden. Correct. That's true.
Chamor represents the animal.
Basically, Chazal say that you're not allowed to speak and you're not allowed to be makabel lashon hara. But they say that the one who is makabel is worse, which on the surface would seem very hard to understand. Because you would think that speaking, the action, you're initiating it. I mean, the other guy is not initiating it. Now, what's the answer? The answer is that it's worse in this respect, is that at least the speaker has a hargasha. You see? He has a sense that he's doing something wrong. He can't deny it. He cannot deny that he is one who indulges in lashon hara. He can't deny it. He just said it. However, the one who just listens, I didn't do anything. Since they didn't do anything, right? And he didn't initiate it. So then it's very easy to say, look, I'm not involved. He's speaking. The guy was speaking. I listened, but I mean, I'm not. That's the point. See, the point, the real, the essential damage of the chait is where it distorts the mind. It allows you to distort reality. That's the real. That's why we even have it like a lot of times in the yeshivas, like, you know, if a guy cuts out or does this or that. In other words, if a guy just comes out and says, look, I had this desire and I went there, it's one thing. But when a person gives many, many reasons and this and that, and I see that it's all hidden, he's not aware of the true cause, to me that always strikes me as being a worse situation. Because I see the guy's in danger. He has the capacity to fool himself. If he would stop, if you'd analyze all the reasoning, the whole chain of reasoning, you see it's not true. It's nonsense. It's all due to the fact that he gave into certain emotions at a certain point. But the guy himself, see, the guy himself can't admit that. So instead of admitting that, right, he starts to concoct all kinds of reasons. But by doing so, you're damaging your mind. The damage over there is you're accepting as true. You're accepting as true something which really isn't true. It has to affect your whole relationship to reality. So that's the thing. But again, the main thing is, you see there again, this whole thing with the nachash, nachoshes, it's a representation of profound ideas. Not just an ordinary little thing over there.